Today's guest on Success Series with Marina Lai is the charming and wise Tom Steffen, who is the CEO of the esteemed butcher and catering service Group Steffen. He modestly calls himself the Chief Entrecote Officer, and in this interview, he speaks extremely candidly about taking over the business from his father, working with his sister, and how to manage and work with a large team and lead them to success. He doesn't hold back on the company's humble beginnings and credits his dad's down-to-earth, hands-on attitude for the company's achievements. Listen to find out exactly how the Steffen Company was built. Okay, Tom. Here I have a little bio of you. I'm going to just read it out so you can correct me if I've got anything wrong, okay? Because sometimes we do get these things wrong. So Tom Steffen is the Chief Entrecote Officer.
Yeah, absolutely.
At Group Steffen. You're going to have to explain that to me in a minute. Maison Steffen was started in 1989 in Steinfurt by his father, Frank Steffen, who is a master butcher. His father grew his business by perfecting a method of drying and salting meat that resulted in a variety of delectable dried meats and ham, much appreciated by his many customers. In 2001, Maison Steffen opened another location in Hagen and in Dudelange. In 2003, they fully dived into their catering business, serving a large private and corporate clientele. In 2008, another location opened in Sens, and they also started a side branch business called Prolocation to facilitate the management of all of their catering materials and logistics. Tom joined the family business in 2009 after having earned his international hotel management degree from the prestigious Institut Paul Bocuse and the Université Jean Moulin in Lyon in France, correct? He is currently in charge of customer relations as its director.
That's the former position, but no.
Okay. Now, what do you like to be known as? Chief Officer?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, in your words, Tom, what do you do?
I'm, first of all, a coach for my 250 employees. Mm-hmm. So I really love the part of the company where I really do adore the whole craft that goes into the different business fields we are active in. So the butchering, the meat curing, the restaurant business, the takeout business, the catering. I love the whole universe of that, like, you know, like serving people. But apart from that, it's our own people which are very dear to our heart, seeing them grow and having that kind of dynamic, because in the end of the day, we're a people business. Mm-hmm. And we are only able to be as good as the results as our employees are able to generate with us and for us. So I'm really being very mindful about that equilibrium and helping them along during times that might be a little bit more atypical, as mm-hmm. the ones we go through now after COVID, like taking back up huge amounts of events, and that being very stressful on people whose lives have been very different for 2.5 years, trying to do everything we can to get them along the way, mm-hmm. and do great things together and achieve great results together. That's for me the most beautiful part of what I'm doing, mm-hmm. Which is also why I'm Chief Entrecote Officer, even if I'm in the end of the day the CEO of all those activities. But I don't like, it sounds so serious.
Yes.
It sounds so yes. serious. And I mean, come on. My father started the company as a butcher shop in 89. And I didn't forget that. And I won't forget that. Mm. So to myself, I'm still the guy selling sausages on the Belgian border. So mm-hmm. it's, and it's very important for me to, also if I want to have, like the really proper human interactions with my colleagues, to stay very down to earth when it comes to that, because we're talking about craftsmen, you know, which mm-hmm. is like different mindsets, and yeah, it's very important.
How did your father create that very down to earth, get your hands dirty attitude for you at home?
It's always been like that. Mm-hmm. There's not a problem too small that can't be solved by myself, or too big on the other hand. Mm-hmm. And you just try to work around things, whatever they are.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's work laying on a table, it's work that has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And you get your hands on it.
You saw him do every part of the business.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he's someone I admire a lot because he's a craftsman at the base and managed to build with a beautiful team around him a quite substantial adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Around those values, and he's restless.
Is he?
He's just restless.
So how is he coping now with you taking such a big role?
Well, he actually took a step back, so he's retired right now.
Since when?
Since January of this year.
Okay, so it's quite
new. Or December last year. So it's quite new. It's something he has to discover, because when you orient your life around something,
yes,
doesn't mean that he's done only that in his life. He's always been there for his family, for his kids, and we had beautiful times together and very invested a lot of energy into that as well. But maybe in an untypical way from where you would compare a person who has a 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not about quantity, it always was about quality. So yeah, I'm really admiring about how he went about his life. Now he has to discover a new life, pretty much, because he's always oriented it around the business adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the path he laid for himself.
Mm-hmm.
Not neglecting anything else again, but it was very intense. And that can't stop from one day to another, and just go from complete dedication to oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to discover that. He still comes to the company a lot. We talk a lot. He's still there a lot to give his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And to help along as a founder, consultant.
Advisor.
Yeah. He wouldn't like those terms, though.
No. What would he prefer?
It's something like a spiritual coach.
How did the conversation come about for him to retire? Was it always the plan for him to retire this year? Or is it something that's he's just decided?
Well, I think he's by the standards of what he's achieved, I think he's still a very young man. So he just turned 60.
Okay.
But he started to work at 15 years. So I think as you go towards that age, you know that something's coming. You're not going to do that until you're 95. Or some people are.
Some people do, don't they? Yeah, some people do.
Some people do, but then you have a second generation and stepping in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obvious that one day it's going to come. And then I think COVID just crystallized and helped to push that idea along and make it a little bit quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really from one day to another. My father I have two sisters, but the business is pretty much his fourth child. And that was really under a hypothetical menace at the beginning of the COVID crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only guess for my father, but I think if you're thinking that there's a real chance of losing your child and you see it coming, yeah, you're very stressed about it, and you don't act rational anymore.
No.
And that really crystallized and didn't help along at the time. So we had a lot of discussions, the two of us, a few louder ones, but which went both ways, and we were have that ability to fight things out very respectfully. And
it
makes us grow.
Yeah.
From there on, it crystallized. You need to have a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Not a 3-minute walk, not a 3-hour walk. Have a 3-month walk, please. And it all built from there. And then you realize that I'm in the company since 12 years, well, 13 now. And it all makes sense. My sister just joined. Mm-hmm. She's 10 years younger than me, so that's almost a generational shift.
Yeah.
And everything works along. At least on the human value side, because the business during the COVID times just didn't come back. That was nobody's fault.
Mm-hmm.
But he saw, yeah, there's really potential. So on one side, they know what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
and there's real potential, and I'm always there to help along if I'm needed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's was a decision that was taken pretty much from one day to another.
Okay.
Where he said, pretty much ripped off the name of his office, put mine there. And so, because he really wanted also our team to feel that shift.
Yes.
So like, it's a done decision, you know, it's not my office anymore. And, no, he's very, very, very straightforward and very dedicated when he gets to such decisions. He doesn't make
emotional, though.
Off-hearted.
No, and I respect that, you know, that level of commitment, but also how symbolic that is for the staff, but also for you. You know, seeing your name up there where your dad's name has been for the past 40, mm-hmm. 40, my math is not very good,
33
years. Do you bear now the responsibility, which of course you do, but do you bear the pressure knowing that he built this all and did such a good job of growing his business since 1989? Is that huge on your shoulders?
It is, and it always was.
Yeah.
A funny thing about family businesses, we talk a lot about those who succeed over time. We don't talk so much about those who don't. that's a very interesting thing. But if you look at people who are successful at the end of their career, there's a lot of chances to say, oh, there, you've been lucky. You've been lucky. You've been lucky there. You've been lucky there. You've been lucky there. But luck is certainly a very existing thing and factor, but I really believe it comes to those who deserve it,
mm-hmm.
and it's what you make out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that pressure, to come back to the pressure as you enter, if you are lucky to be able to join a family business, which is going well, which has beautiful people built around it, very dedicated and customers. It is huge luck.
Mm-hmm.
But then from there on, you have to take it on. That's where the pressure comes on, because whatever position you might join a family business, if I would have joined as a dishwasher,
mm-hmm.
people would have still known that I bear my family name.
Yes.
You know, you have that when you come in. Like,
yes.
It's pretty clear. That, or chances are at least high that you're not there to remain a dishwasher your whole life. So it's important to do it.
Yes.
But then where do you take it? And as you go up, but the pressure is always on from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a long-term vision for what you're doing. You're not living day to day or week to week. You have a long-term vision that mutates with your personality over the years,
mm-hmm.
Which is a beautiful thing. And yeah, you just take it from there. When I joined the company, we were 90 people. Now we're 250. So in those 12 years alone, I think I went along with a lot of the growth of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So that pressure built up very gradually as well. So
okay.
It was quite, okay to digest.
Some people would say, you know, I don't hold back, Tom.
Go ahead.
Some people would say you're in a very privileged position to be in a family business.
I am.
You are. There are two ways to look at this. On the other hand, some would say if you start from nothing, if you literally start from zero, then anything after that is a plus, right? It's a gain. So
mm-hmm.
entrepreneurs who build something out, not so someone like your father,
mm-hmm.
super successful. He built the business, right?
Absolutely.
Nothing was handed to him.
No.
No. You are the opposite of your father, because something was created by somebody who is your father, who cares for you, and now you can have it. You've earned it, but he also did give it to you.
Well, you can have it. That's not quite like things work.
No, but that's simplifying it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
For the sake of this example, what's harder? To be in your father's position where you build something out of nothing. So everything you do, you get a round of applause for, really, right? It, no matter if he builds the business to 30 people, he gets a round of applause. 60, 90, 250, doesn't really matter because he started from nothing. But with you, You started when there were 90 people. Now there's 250. People are looking at you going, yeah, but you know, he started when he was how old?
Oh my God. He started in 89, but he did work before that as a butcher.
Right. So he's done all that hard work and you've been set up for this. So how do you see it? Are you very privileged or is it difficult because you're already starting from this point?
Well, two things. People have the tendency to only look in the present, but not look at the past. Because I mean, I am his kid, and I love my father, and I've been there when the times have been tough. Mm-hmm. I've been along. I've seen it, you know, and it's a very important experience, I think.
Yeah.
Am I lucky, privileged? Yeah, of course. Should I feel sorry for it? I don't think so much. But it's just if I want to be respectful about that, and I know for the privileged position I'm in, if I want to be respectful about it, it can only materialize in the way I interact with our customers, mm-hmm. with our employees, with the people I'm able to touch, mm-hmm. in a hopefully positive way. That's the impact I can make, and I can honor that legacy by putting a lot of dedication into it. To try to make it worthwhile for everybody. And that's being respectful of the legacy of my father. Of course, I'm a whole different position than what he did. Mm-hmm. We often had that talk. If at the time I had to have, I'm a different person than my father. We're not copy-paste, you know, and that's a good thing. If I had to take the same risks from the same point, would I have done it? I don't have the answers.
Yeah.
I don't have it. But matter of fact is, it's not my reality. Mm-hmm. My reality is different. And I just try to honor that.
Mm-hmm. When you first started, did you constantly feel like you had to prove yourself, honestly, to at least your colleagues?
Yes. People have high standards. But they have their own standards, which they apply to you.
Mm.
Because there might be things they want to see the company go in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And they project those wishes onto you to see, oh, next generation, I hope he takes it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have to go the way they imagine without speaking out and saying what it should be? No, I don't think so. So there's a lot of potential for frustration.
Yeah.
But really, the pressure is on yourself. It's more the pressure that you can put on yourself than... Because if people don't put pressure on you, they abandon you, you know? They abandon your potential.
Mm-hmm.
If people don't have any form of wishful thinking for what you would or might do, maybe it is because they doubt that you can do anything or mm-hmm. something or that thing. And so having pressure from around is a good thing.
That expectation, Trust. It's not a bad thing, is it? The
No.
expectation of what you can do.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You see it as a good thing.
Just keep it to a realistic standard.
How are you making the business your own? Are you just continuing your father's legacy?
I'm continuing my father's legacy, but it's more we consider, and when I say we, it's my father, it's myself, and now it's, of course, my sister. Mm-hmm. We consider it as a living thing. And that's the thing of beauty, because really it is only like the equilibrium of our coworkers and our customers.
Mm-hmm.
In the end of the day, that's it. If we are able to motivate our coworkers and show them that we live up to the values we set, mm-hmm. We are able to go places.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the important part is now. So there's one position on one hand where, of course, which is the physical ownership of the business, like the shareholder position and everything. And then there's, on the other hand, there's like that moral ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And in our vision, I think we pretty much share that with our employees. So like we really feel like that. And it a lot of the value also comes from our employees of where the business is going, because we make take decisions together.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's just a process of building. It never seems to end.
Mm-hmm. It's constantly evolving, yeah, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. If you weren't doing what you're doing now, what would you be doing?
Actually, we were never, and I can say that for myself and for my sisters as well, we were never pushed into the business.
Okay.
Or the business drew us in. It's not even my father who drew us into the business. When I was younger, I wanted to become an architect. And I went that way in mid school. But I very quickly realized that the real life of an architect is not... either it was architecture that didn't like me or the other way around. I still don't have the answers, but I just knew straight away after a few months that it was not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
But beforehand, of course, I was speaking a lot about it. My father, who he flooded my room with books about design and architecture.
So he encouraged
really wanted
it.
To encourage
okay.
us to go in a, well, just... in a meaningful way about our lives. So, and the only way to do that is to do something you like and you want to do. And it's also the only thing, the only way to be good at something, I believe, long term.
Mm-hmm.
You can't love everything you do all the time, of course. But long term, I think it's the only way.
Mm-hmm.
Because at some point, otherwise you will grow sour about it. And so he encouraged us always to go about our lives the way we saw it. And it was a very funny moment when I realized I didn't want to become an architect. I knew what I wanted to do straight away, because I grew up around that company. It's just that living organism that I love. And it's the people, first and foremost. It's the craftsmanship.
Mm-hmm.
And everything about it. I just love it.
Do you think it's fair to say that maybe your father didn't have the perfect experience, and that's why he didn't want you all to go into the business? Like, is there, not that he didn't want you, but is there a reason why he didn't encourage that more? Does that say something about his own career, do you think?
No, it was always very clear that he would have loved us to.
Okay.
But he was
he was being fair, wasn't he?
He was trying to be fair and hold that back, because he knows for the influence that a father has on their kids' minds.
Or it was reverse psychology all along.
maybe, but I doubt it. I really very heavily doubt it. When I announced him that I would love to join the company, he was super, super happy.
Wow.
Super happy, super proud. And I think also like doubtful, like you.
Are you sure?
No. But then again, not maybe not openly, you know.
Okay.
But when you've created something like that, it's like, will you be up to the task? You know,
fair.
Because I know you as my kid. Mm-hmm. I know your strengths. I know your flaws. Maybe as a parent, you a lot of the time you see the flaws a little bit more. and you say, will you be up to the task? But I think now he's really proud of all of his children, of course, but for the way the two that are in the company actually are influencing it.
Is he able to express that?
Yeah.
He is?
Yeah.
So he's able to say, Tom, very proud.
Yeah. But he, as it, once again, we are able to fight about stuff very respectfully when... I say something silly, like I'll excuse myself maybe a day later, and the same for him.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes us grow.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it's always been very open, mm-hmm. Like emotionally as well. And you say, I'm proud, like I'm disappointed, I love what you did there. But the whole spectrum has to be there. It cannot only be positive encouragement.
Of course, yeah.
It also has to be, if you would have done that this way, I think you would have had another outcome.
Mm-hmm. And what about you for the next generation? Do you have the same expectations, or is it different now that you've lived through it?
I really try to find ways to follow, at least in that regard, a very copy-paste example of what my father did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to influence them too much.
Okay.
So I have two girls. Mm-hmm. One at the moment is six, and the youngest one is two. And they're so beautiful. I don't want to, too much influence their choices. I want to give them all tools along,
mm-hmm.
And help them to make decisions, like for the good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
There are very obvious reasons to join a family business
mm-hmm.
when you're young, and you think, oh, at age 30, at age 40, I want to be there and that and that and that and that. But you're not really on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the full spectrum, sorry. And I just want to give them the tools to hopefully build themselves in a meaningful way. That's all I strive for. And in that regard, I try to do copy-paste what my father did.
This might sound like a really silly question, but can you actually butcher meat? Like you, personally, like could you actually like...
I can, but I'm very slow.
Thank you for your honesty.
No, I mean, like the whole spectrum of operations we have is so large.
Yes.
And I get the question a lot of times.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
Like, what are your meat craftsmanship skills, actually? And I always answer that it's enough to impress 99.9% of the population.
Then that's good enough. Your interest
but
is
I'm
more
not,
in...
I'm not a butcher by any... stress of the word. I know very well what I'm talking about, and I know very well how the business goes and how the work of a butcher goes. But as to replicate it myself, maybe not the most valuable way to put me in the business.
So we're unlikely to step into one of your shops and see you there.
But that's likely.
With a cut of steak and a knife.
That's unlikely.
That's unlikely. So tell me about the catering business that started in 2003. I'm guessing before that in Luxembourg, there wasn't a demand for it, or it wasn't something that had been set up yet?
There was a very existing market. The only thing, it was not very dynamic.
Mm.
I think the whole food experience, not only considering our business, but it really grew in experience for the customers as well. It modernized, it got more dynamic,
mm-hmm.
like from 2008 onwards.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, it was just something which was very stable. So there were a few big names, and apart from those, there was not a lot happening. That totally changed. So we have now a more diverse landscape of companies in Luxembourg, and also talking for catering and restaurants now,
mm-hmm.
and in Luxembourg, and also a lot of people, because the market is very dynamic, coming to work cross borders. And I'm talking companies like from the French border region, from the German border region, coming to work in Luxembourg. Mm-hmm. So that grew a lot more dynamic.
What makes your catering business different to the other ones?
The markets has become... Mm-hmm. a lot more dynamic. I'm not talking specifically for a company, and I leave that choice up to our customers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the stability and quality over time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what you get. The ability to always refresh your brand, mm-hmm. yet never forget where you're coming from, because we started the company in 2003. Yet before that, we've already done events.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually grew out of a more party service thing in the butcher shops, which was, we have a family barbecue, we have this and that, and maybe a roast pig on a spit, and mm-hmm. All that stuff. And it just grew because we did that in a way which surpassed what our customer maybe demanded. And so we got tasked with like more... refined events,
mm-hmm.
and actually it grew from that from 2003, but it was active before,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't actually have one ambition, which is being able to take care of our customers for all day life events.
Okay.
And it's very important to me because I don't see no difference between a very, very important gala dinner or a family brunch for 20 persons in your backyard. And I want to be as diverse as possible to always grant the same customer experience for all those types of events. So that's really the main goal, while continuously refreshing and adapting our products, but still with the same customer experience and the same values at the core.
That's great to know, because sometimes I feel not embarrassed. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's like I'm having a family brunch. There's only really six of us, but it's an important thing for our family. I'm not that great with meat. I'd love to go in and say, can you help me sort this out? Give me the thing, tell me what to do, and let me just let me look good, basically. So it's good to know that there's nothing too small for you, and that you see the importance of that.
There's for catering, for off-premise catering, because you always see the service, you see the products, but in what happens in the background and what people don't see, it's a very logistically intense setting to work in. So being fully capable in that field really makes the difference. So there comes a whole lot of logistics with an event. And if your event is six people, logistics is going to be pretty much the same as you're going to be 30. There's like budget-wise, like a cutoff where it's you really have to convince yourself that it still makes sense to get a caterer like for three persons.
It's just
not very cost effective. let's put it that. But we've done marriage proposal dinners in the woods for two persons.
My God, was that amazing?
It was beautiful.
It
was beautiful, but both beautiful and on the other hand, hilarious, because you see everything you have to put in place to cook for two persons in the woods. It's but it's a nice adventure.
What's the best event you've done?
Oh my God, there's so many. There's so many beautiful experiences.
It's cool because you go from like the idea with the person to seeing it all the way to the end.
To put one experience, which was a really great feeling for us, there was a customer, a local customer, who wanted to do an event in Amsterdam. And we do a company or cater for our customers in different places and sometimes go a little bit further. So that time was Amsterdam. So what I tried, because I really try to speak to my colleagues, especially on a European level. So I have guys in Amsterdam I know who do a beautiful job. I have guys in Barcelona, in Porto, in Germany. So what I tried to do, because I know if we're going to do that event, because it was a massive event, it was like 250 persons in a very old townhouse in Amsterdam next to the canal, where we had to close down the street to haul everything into the building. And I say, you know, I'm just making you a proposal because logistically it's going to be very intense. Not for the work, but from the budget side. There are guys I know in Amsterdam who do a beautiful job. Don't you want to check them out and come back to me? If you want us to do it, we can still do it. We'll be with you 100%. So I went to those guys, still came back and said, no, I want to do it with you guys. And so, yeah, that felt beautiful. So, and that event, I was at that time, I think it was 2011-ish, very personal, involved in organizing events. So that was one I organized. And so we went down there and had most beautiful event for 250 people. And then drove back and just felt like, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
At the time, the company was much smaller. The guys I tried to put them in contact with was a huge company in the Netherlands who do have decades of experience with really very upscale events, and they still chose us over them. So it just feels great that when you put a lot of effort in, that's why it's so hard to pick like your best event. Like every event where your customer is happy by the way you made them feel, the food you served, and they just feel, when you feel it, there are not a lot of businesses where you a lot of the time get to feel that people are truly thankful for the work you've put in. That's maybe the most important thing.
And what does living a successful life mean to you?
Being able to enjoy the small things. Being able to be grateful. Have a sense of meaning, however abstract that might sound. Having a feeling that you have an impact. Like really that basic thing, okay, I'll take this wholeheartedly and this big stone and I'll try to carry it up that hill. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard. And of course it is, because otherwise you're not really able to forge a personality out of it. Mm-hmm. But it's a very beautiful way.
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to be very grateful, thankful for your privileges, also be thankful for the hardships,
mm-hmm.
which is a quality that you really have to grow and hone, mm-hmm. and try to make the best out of it. That for me is a happy life.
So you're already living that?
I try to.
With such a big business and such a big responsibility, there come sacrifices. What are you sacrificing in order to put your all into the business right now?
It doesn't feel like sacrifice. It's just, and at that point, coming back to the concept of family business, if you've lived that way for your whole life, you don't know a life where somebody has, where both your parents have a 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't exist. And even when you're home, it doesn't stop.
Yeah.
So I don't know anything else in my life.
Yeah.
Not apart from the business, but as a way of life. And it feels great. Because you have something that's always on your mind.
In a good way.
not always, but because there's also nights you maybe would like to think about different stuff, but your brain doesn't shut off.
Mm-hmm.
Or little regrets, like you're with your children, but you're really sensing that in reality you're somewhere else.
But that's the truth, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. Of course, yeah. There's no reason to be shameful about it, but it's just but catch yourself doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And try to be indulgent with yourself and try to evolve. It mm-hmm. doesn't happen overnight. To be really be in the moment with the people that you are with at that moment.
Are your children growing up then exactly the way you did?
No, very differently.
Okay.
Very, very differently. And I do think a lot about that because they will not know the hardships I've seen from my father's side.
Yeah.
Chances are, at least if we don't do, me and my sister, if we don't do too silly of a job, and hopefully they won't have those hardships.
Mm-hmm.
Be they emotional, financial, whatever. So on one hand, I think that's a plus, but I don't want to be too overprotective because that also gave me lessons. And how do you want to replace those lessons and make, if one day both my girls decide they want to join the company or my sister's kids, how in the world do I manage it for them to still have the same mentality if I'm still just a guy that sells sausages by the Belgian border,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, and that scares the heck out of me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, last question, Tom. What would you tell your 18-year-old self? You don't have to change anything. You can just go back and meet him and you get to tell him something. What would you say?
Well, I will tell him to live his life now, not in a projection of your 10-year older self.
Is that what you did a lot?
Yeah, of course, because having an image of yourself, of what you want to do and what you want to be, but it's still your 18-year-old self, so you're pretty much a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But you feel like an adult because you're 18 years old. You pretty much aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And just live your life now.
Mm-hmm.
And not from a point of view what's going to happen in 10 years. You miss some stuff if you do that.
I lied. I said that was the last question, but there's one more thing I wanted to ask
you. Go ahead.
Can you give a piece of advice to somebody stepping into a family business?
Advice, no, because I'm 36 years old, which I still consider pretty reasonably young. My sister disagrees, but hey, it's life. But only experience. Don't try. It's actually an experience I'd like just to share with both parents, which are in a family company, and the kids joining them. So let's say your parents have, at that point, you joined a company, worked in the company over 20 years, okay? And they've done roughly, let's take a low estimate, 55 hours a week. So that over, let's say they go a little bit on vacation, 50 weeks a year. You multiply that by 20, get 55,000 hours. Don't compare somebody who's fresh, who has no track record, at least in that company, to his active, and put them immediately on the standard of somebody who has 55,000 hours in that works in no dimension. And don't be frustrated about it. Also as a kid and also as a parent, it's just something you have to understand. They come in, they're fresh, meaning they don't have the amount of hours and experience they have. That's what they really have to give and what they can share to help them along. But they have to build it.
Takes time. There's no other way, is there?
There's no time and dedication. There's time, dedication, discipline. There's no remedy.
There's no shortcut for this.
No. There's no easy way.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
That was incredible. So yeah, if you want to find out more about Tom's business, then his website is
www.stefan.lu.
There we go. Thank you very much, Tom. It was great having you.
Thank you.